Hey, this is Steve Nash. You're listening to CITR 101.9, the home of the UBC Thunderbirds. Slow out summer night, patio blast, relax, radio sounds, gonna pick up a groove. It's only right, all the ladies looking lovely in their summer dresses, so impressive. Everybody just mingling around, I'm getting ready for the sun to go dancing. She loves it, gotta find myself a sweet honey. Better call, baby.
Welcome to Winner's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Lots to get into today. Boxing, horse racing, hockey, we got you covered. But to start us off, we're going to talk a little UBC Thunderbird men's baseball with the head coach, Terry McKeag, on the line with us right now on his way to, you're on your way to Idaho there, Terry, aren't you?
On my way down to Caldwell, Idaho, where Albertson College is situated.
Your former team. Now, Terry, I opened up with the Golden Girls there, and there's a reason I played it. Are you a fan? Were you a fan of the Golden Girls?
Oh, yeah, no question. I remember it well, and a lot of old time. I'm about that age. That's right in my time frame.
May 9th, 1992, Terry, 15 years ago today, the last Golden Girls episode was shown on NBC.
It's quite an important day that brings back a lot of memories.
There you go. And just so everybody's listening, later on in the show at about 4:45, 4:50, we are going to be giving a Golden Girls trivia question, and I've got a pretty cool prize for you. So heads up on that one, Terry.
Yeah, no question.
Golden Girls trivia question. Awesome. Terry, let's get into your baseball team right now. You're getting the playoffs started this weekend. You're going to be playing Albertson tomorrow, your former team, the team you used to play for. Terry, 18-9 conference record this season, 13-1 home record, 21-18 overall, so you had a little trouble on the road. How would you sum up, though, your regular season?
Regular season, we were quite happy with. I mean, it was such a transitional year for us, losing 18 players total. I think it was 13 or 14 seniors off last year's World Series team. So, you know, this year was all about a bunch of new guys and young guys getting a chance to play at this level for the first time. But had a lot of senior leadership that held us together and helped us to that conference record, which was almost good enough to finish first and host the tournament. But, you know, guys like Doug Grant, Brendan Kornberger, and Brett Murray, and guys that have been around and were part of that World Series team last year, that didn't want any part of it being a major rebuilding year or a year where we've missed the playoffs or something like that. So, you know, overall, I really hope we can play well this weekend and finish this thing off, because I've been pretty proud of how these kids have played.
Yeah, those three players you mentioned, Terry, all three of them senior players. Tell us about these guys and what they've done for you at UBC.
Yeah, I mean, well, start with Doug Grant on the mound, our number one pitcher this year, and you know, arguably one of our best pitchers we've ever had. I think he has tied the career wins record with Jeff Francis right now, and to where if he was to win a game here in the regionals, he would break the all-time wins record at UBC, and speaks a lot for what Doug's meant to our program. He's been a kid that right from his freshman year, although he, you know, went through some bumps and bruises like most freshmen do in his first year, I mean, got better every single year and anchored that World Series team last year, and then this year has stepped forward and thrown big games for us also. And his battery mate, Brendan Kornberger, behind the plate, who's probably been his catcher for a lot of that. Brendan finished in his third year as a T-Bird, but his last year of eligibility, and given us a lot of leadership from behind the plate this year, both defensively and helping a lot of young pitchers, you know, through their growing pains this year. So Brendan's been a big part. And then Brett Murray, one of my all-time favorites, just a hard-nosed player, team guy, you know, been our starting third baseman. I took a backseat last year to Tyler Hughes when Tyler Hughes was playing so well over there, but never heard any problems out of Brett, never complaining. And then this year took on a big role, became our closer, and pitched for the first time since high school. And I think he's tied the all-time season, you know, single season record of six saves already. So great athlete, and these guys will be missed.
Yeah, Brett Murray, I mean, I actually, Terry, I think you might know this. I umpired him when he was pitching for Italian-Canadian Deli at Dunbar Little League. He was a great pitcher then. What took you so long to figure out this guy could pitch?
We don't, you know, at the collegiate level, I mean, it's tough for guys to do both. It's very tough on their arm, and, you know, you got things like we're trying to get them in the weight room for him and to improve his offense and his swing. He was really trying to put on a lot of weight. You know, there's usually injury issues with guys that pitch and try to play at the same time. But Brett came to us as a shortstop, one of the top hitters out of the BC Premier League, out of the high school league. So I didn't really even give thought, or I'd heard kind of rumors that he used to be quite a pitcher when he was younger, but never really presented a need or a must until this year when Sean Schaefer was declared ineligible academically and left us a pretty big hole on the mound. And Brett stepped forward and done a great job for us this year.
Yeah, Sean Schaefer, your ace last year, but a guy who stepped up big time for you this year. I believe he's going to be getting the start for you guys tomorrow. Brendan Rolfe, 6-0 on the season, 1.57 ERA and 57 and a third innings. Can't ask for much more than that, can you?
No, it's, again, Brendan, you know, a senior and really a step forward, you know, to show some of these younger guys. I mean, Brendan threw in the bullpen for us last year and was used very sparingly, didn't have a lot of success. As most people, it was his first year in the program. He didn't know what it took or meant to compete at this level and to win, you know, against teams like Lewis Clark State. But, you know, he learned his lessons last year and stepped forward this year. We gave him a chance to start, and he's really ran with it. And him and Doug have really anchored our staff here this year.
And you've had some hitters step up for you this year, Terry.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, off and on. I mean, a little bit of a struggle this year offensively. I mean, on the weekend against Albertson, we needed to win all three to host the tournament. And, you know, we win the first 1-0 in a close ball game. Doug Grant throws a shutout. Then we lose 3-1 and just couldn't hit the ball at all. Couldn't get any big hits. Couldn't get anything going against Albertson's number one pitcher. And so it's been kind of, to me, a little bit of our Achilles heel this year compared to last year's team, where we're so talented offensively and still had guys like Doug Grant and Sean Schaefer on the mound and Andrew LaFleur, and our defense was so good last year. Our offense has just been really sporadic this year, you know, gone through real phases. So I'm hoping this weekend will be one of those weekends where we do swing the bats well and give us a chance to win.
Albertson, you were 3-4 versus them this year, Terry. How are you matching up to win this tournament? Obviously, you guys aren't the favorites, but are you the number two seed in this tournament? How are you looking?
Well, I'll get Lewis Clark State playing this year, so that changes everything for the first time ever. So they're coming in as obviously the heavy favorites, and us and Albertson in the first round game on Thursday, it's going to be a great matchup. Pretty actually quite even, you know, the two teams. We do a lot of the same things together. They got three good starting pitchers. We do also, and both teams offensively, you know, are nothing, you know, nothing that you really fear. So it's about execution. Who's going to get some guys on and be able to bunt them over and get the big base hits to knock them in? And that's what we hope we can do on Thursday.
So LC State, obviously the dynasty in your league, they're now playing in the regional. Is this a permanent thing you're looking at here? Because this is going to be real tough on you guys.
Yeah, I know it was bad timing for this year. From what we've heard, that the NAI has already declared that next year they'll be back out. So we're hoping this was just a one-year deal, and that'll be good for the long-term, you know, direction of our program. It just kind of hurts for this year. Just makes it so much tougher. I mean, they are who they are, and we know them quite well, and we've been fortunate. I mean, they're 48-4 this year, but two of their four losses all year have been to us, and so we've showing that we can beat them. We beat them once in that Bailey and once at their field. So that's got to give us confidence heading in the tournament. There isn't a team in this tournament, with Concordia being the four seed, that we haven't beat this year.
Terry, great success for your program. You, of course, built it from scratch. You got a pitcher in the majors, lots of pitchers in the pros. One thing you are trying to accomplish is to get a nice new stadium right on campus here at UBC. How is that coming along?
Things are moving very well. Actually, from what we hear, it's going to the Board of Governors as part of an overall athletics project later on this month. But I think we're at about 80% of the total funding is in place already, and we're quite excited. It's something that, you know, not a lot of people understand. You know, they think we're down at Nat Bailey, and it's a great facility. Well, we don't get really access to Nat Bailey for practice, and you know, Bob Phillip and athletics and some people, we've been able to convince and show that, you know, things aren't very, very good for the baseball team facilities-wise at Nat Bailey, because they want to take care of it, keep it a pro facility and looking good for their summers. They don't like us on there a lot, beating it up in the off-season, in the winter, and yet, you know, that's where we need to be training. We need to be on a field, being able to inter-squad and do some things. So the only way to really fix all that is to get our own facility on campus where we can practice, and I think we're still going to play our games at Nat Bailey, but if we ran into weather issues, we're going to do an artificial infield, so build it to the weather that we see in Vancouver from September to April, which is a lot of rain, and have it that, you know, we're not rained out all the time, we're not able to get on the practice field.
And you say you've got 80% of it paid for, it looks like. Is it about a $6 million facility, or are my figures way wrong there?
No, well, that was our original a few years ago, what we were going off. We've actually gone and phased it. You know, I mean, the most important thing for us right now is to get a field that we can practice on. So this phase one is just an actual, you know, field with the artificial surface. It'll have lights. It's got the chain link fence, just kind of the basics that we need to be out there every day. And then down the road here, we've got some other guys, and, you know, a guy in particular you've already mentioned is in the big leagues, and some people that we are going to step forward down the road to make it into the stadium that we dream of and envision of. But right now, it's more important we get a place that we can get out and practice every day and keep developing our players.
Sorry, Terry, just how much is this field going to cost, and when do you hope to have it up?
The having it up part's tough. I mean, there's still a lot of stuff to go through the different levels at UBC to get the approvals and make sure that they approve of what's going on. I think we're talking around the $2 million mark for this phase one of the facility, and I'm pretty excited that we've gotten as far as we have in the funding of it already.
No, terrific. And got to ask you, Jeff Francis, Terry, just signed the big contract in the offseason. Terry, I had to drop him in my baseball pool. 1-4, 5.61 ERA, 1.71 whip. What's going on with your golden boy this year?
You know, it's a lot like his first 2 years. It's just, you know, adjustments. It's about, you know, he's still learning how to compete and do well at the big league level. And, you know, he went out and threw a really good game last night, gets a no decision, but, you know, a little bit more Jeff Francis-like. So, you know, he just, again, he's a young kid. He's still just learning the ropes in the big leagues and learning lessons from good hitters that if you make mistakes and leave the ball up, you know, you're going to get punished. But, you know, you can't discount the fact of what he's done in his first 2 years with the Rockies. I think he's their only winning pitcher in the last 2 years. And for a young kid in the big leagues, that's pretty impressive.
He'll be fine, hey? He'll be fine.
No question. I haven't panicked yet and dropped him off my fantasy team. So he's still might not get the start every week, depending on the matchups. But he's the type of kid, you know, I think without injury, knock on wood, he's going to pitch in the big leagues for 15 years. I mean, and I think when you look back at it after 15 years, you'll look at a guy that was pretty consistent, became a pretty good major league pitcher.
Right. It's that ERA and whip, Terry. You just can't have that on your fantasy team, though.
No, it really does hurt. And it's surprising because he actually doesn't throw that bad at Coors Field. And on the road, there's certain teams I just, you know, against San Francisco and teams that I just won't start them. I watched it too many times over the last 3 years. He's got a few teams that really beat up on him, but now we're pretty proud of Jeff, and he's excited to have done the contract and then, you know, financially be kind of taken care of over the next few years. And he's just, again, just starting his young career.
With that long contract, should be longer than just a few years, I will say that. What's your goal this playoff, Terry?
I just, you know what, I really hope that we can come out and play some of our best baseball of the year. And like I said, at the end of the day, if that's enough to beat Lewis Clark State twice in the same tournament, you know, to me isn't what it's all about. It's getting out there and just playing good baseball at the end of the year. And if we can do that, the kids, you know, will be able to help, you know, hold their head high. I mean, this will be something that no one, I don't think, has ever done, beat them twice in a same weekend of a playoff series, including the World Series. I mean, people have beaten them once, but never twice. And so we just want to go out and play hard this weekend. Big game on Thursday against Albertson. Can't take them lightly. They're a good club also.
Awesome. Terry, you got a tough matchup this year. Sounds like they're going to rectify for next year, but best of luck this weekend.
Okay, appreciate it, Darryl.
Okay, that was head coach of the UBC Thunderbirds, Terry McKeag. Yeah, Jeff Francis this year, 1-4, 5.61 ERA, 1.71 whip. Now, I'm a big Jeff Francis fan, and I drafted him in my fantasy baseball pool, but, you know, maybe we'll try to get Jeff on sometime soon. But he did come on the offseason. Love Jeff Francis. But that is a pretty high whip. UBC going to play Albertson this weekend. It's the first round of their playoffs, and the way it works is they get about four teams together. They're playing a tournament down in Caldwell, Idaho, hosted by Albertson College. But Lewis and Clark State, the number one team in pretty much the NAIA, they host the championship every year. They used to just get an automatic berth into the championship, sort of like, you know, how the Vancouver Giants are hosting the Memorial Cup this weekend. Well, Lewis and Clark State would just get the automatic bid, but as opposed to the Giants sort of playing in the first round and knocking teams out, Lewis and Clark State would just go straight to the finals. Well, that's not how it's working this year. They're making Lewis and Clark State earn their, you know, just play teams and knock out teams on the way. So UBC and Albertson, sort of the teams in recent years back and forth, who wins this Region 1, this first round. Well, now they've got to contend with Albertson, so tough spot for head coach of the UBC Thunderbirds, Terry McKeag, but sounds like they are going to be getting a practice facility out there soon, a $2 million job, and then you could just see it. I mean, I will have to say, Jeff Francis just signed a four-year, $13 million contract. He will be eligible for free agency on the offseason following that, and if he goes that free agent route, waits for that contract to come up, big-time money, or maybe he'll sign an extension with Colorado before. Maybe he'll be traded before. Who knows? But chances are this next contract, Jeff Francis, I mean, I'll put you this way. Gil Mesh, I think, won 13 games last year for Seattle. Ted Lilly, 15-game winner for Toronto last year. Those guys hit the Francis is similar to those guys. He's on a similar path to those guys. Average pitcher, maybe above-average pitcher. Those guys hit the free agent market. Mesh, $50 million deal or $55 million deal. Ted Lilly, $40 million deal or something like that. So, you know, at least in this instance, it is going to help a program here at UBC. That's what I got to say on that one. Jeff Francis, 1-4 on the year. Hopefully he'll improve on that. One thing that's getting me in baseball, and I actually wanted to talk to Terry McKeag about it, but we'll save it for another day. What is with all the pitchers getting injured right now? I don't know if you've been following baseball or what's going on, but, you know, Francisco Liriano, here's this hotshot young pitcher for the Minnesota Twins, torn ligament in his elbow, gone for the year. This happened to him last year. Mark Pryor, the hotshot pitcher for the Cubs, young guy, him and Kerry Wood, we're going to lead this rotation into the promised land and for several years from now. He's got a rotator cuff problem. He's done for this year, maybe done for all of 2008, and it looks like he may be 100% by 2009, and that's if he is ever, in fact, going to be a quality major league pitcher again. So you can come out and say right now that Mark Pryor's career in jeopardy. Felix Hernandez, Seattle Mariners, he's their hotshot young pitcher. He's got a strained right forearm right now. Phil Hughes, New York Yankee, 20-year-old, he's their hotshot young pitching prospect. Had a no-hitter going for 6 1/3 innings at Texas, and then he strained his hip. He's on the disabled list right now. Joel Zumaya, He's got a he's the hotshot young reliever right now, throwing 100 miles per hour more last year than any other pitcher, than all the other pitchers in baseball combined. He is on the disabled list right now with a strained tendon in his middle finger. And I wanted to ask Terry this, but, you know, we just couldn't go on, and we're talking UBC baseball today, but I would like to get into this with him on another day, is why are pitchers getting injured now more than ever? It doesn't make sense. You figure with, well, quite frankly, the steroids they're on, but that I don't think that's the case with these guys. And, you know, all the training they have today and all the technology and the fact that these guys don't have to get different jobs in the offseason because they're getting cajillions playing Major League Baseball, why are pitchers breaking down more than ever now? It doesn't make sense. And some guys come out and say, well, you know, they throw harder than before. Well, Bob Feller threw 100 miles per hour, and he had a long career. He lasted, he's a Hall of Famer. He had over 250 wins, something like that, and would have had probably 300 for sure if he didn't have to go serve in World War II. I'm a little lost on this one. And the fact is that these pitchers that used to be able to pitch, you know, were healthy. Bob Gibson, you know, all these kind of guys, Don Drysdale, they pitched more and they got hurt less. And I'm pretty sure they threw just as hard. And today they have the five-man rotations. Back when these guys threw, they had the four, maybe even a three-man rotation. Some of these guys would get, you know, 45, 46 starts a year, maybe 50. And today they're getting less starts and getting hurt more. And Daseki Matsuzaka, if I have that name right, you know, give me a shiny quarter. He, the Red Sox pitcher, they say in Japan he used to throw 200 pitches sometimes. That's what I heard. And apparently, what I'm hearing is that these pitchers come over to North America, or the way we're taught in North America, is hard all the time and don't pitch as much. Well, in Japan, they pitch more and they get hurt less. So maybe that's the answer. I really want to get into that with Terry now because, you know, obviously it's not a major issue here, but it just doesn't make much sense why pitchers got hurt less when they pitched more and they had less technology and training than they do today, and why they were able to pitch more. I just don't get it. Anyways, folks, you are listening to Wiener's Barbecue on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. It is now time for our trivia question. And what we're going to do right now, I don't know if you were listening to the very start of the show, but I got to cue it up again. And Luke Mead, our music director, actually made he wasn't impressed that I was playing this earlier on, just sort of trying to get ready for the show here. But this is the topic. Hold on.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down the road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant. And if you threw a party, invited everyone you knew, you would see the biggest gift would be from me, and the card attached would say, thank you for being a friend.
There you go. I've played it twice now. In less than 25 minutes, the Golden Girls theme song. Once again, as I said at the very beginning of the show, May 9th, 1992 was the final episode of the Golden Girls. The final episode of the Golden Girls, which was shown on NBC for 7 years. And our trivia prize today, and you got about 15 minutes to call in, and once I get into my second guest, I will not be taking any more calls. We are going to be going to Tampa, Florida at the Seminole Hard Rock Cafe, where my Mr. Las Vegas correspondent, BJ Bass, will be with us. We're going to be talking boxing. We're going to be talking Las Vegas coming to coming to Las Vegas. Want to know what BJ's got on that and the NFL draft. Lots of fun stuff coming up at about 10 minutes after 5. So you've got between now and then. Give me a call up here at 822-2487, 822-2487, and announce and give me the answer to my Golden Girls. 15 years since they left the airwaves, my Golden Girls trivia question. You got to have that answer, and you're going to win the prize. Okay, the prize is, why it's cool is you actually have a choice. You actually have a choice today. And I actually do not have these yet, but I am picking them up on Sunday. So you will have your choice of one of the following. And, of course, it's hockey going on right now. That's, of course, the big thing. You got the Vancouver Giants playing their Memorial Cup Western Hockey League Championship. No, Western Hockey League Championship Series, Game 3 tonight at the Pacific Coliseum. Of course, NHL playoffs going on right now. The Canucks are out of it, but, you know, You've got Detroit playing Anaheim in one conference, and you've got Ottawa going at it with Buffalo in the other. So, you know, we're into the semifinals there. So we've got some hockey gifts to give away, because that's also what our city is, too, a very hockey-oriented city. Okay, I just got to write it down so I make sure I get it right. I'm just writing it down so I make sure I get the prizes right. You will be eligible, folks, and I think this is a cool prize, for one of the following. Okay? You're eligible, and it's your choice. Your choice. I'm going to be giving these away till they're gone as the weeks go by this summer, but it is your choice on what you could have, and it goes to the winner of our Golden Girls Trivia Contest. Okay? 15 years ago today, the Golden Girls left the airwaves forever. Okay, the prize is you get one of the following. Okay, you get a Cesar, they're all signed 8x10 photos. You get a Cesar Maniego. You can have a Yvan Cornoyer, former Montreal Canadian great. Ted Lindsay, former Hall of Fame Detroit Red Wing. Glenn Hall. It's got the record for consecutive games played by a goalie. I'm going to go on and say we'll never be beaten. Gilbert Perreault, Hall of Fame Buffalo Sabre, who the Vancouver Canucks almost had in the 1970-71 expansion draft. They almost had him, but they ended up with Dale Talon. They lost the spin of the wheel. Mike Bossy, enough said. I believe the most consecutive 50-goal seasons to ever start a career. We're talking Gretzky never did it. Lemieux never did it. None of those guys did. Charlie Hodge, Hall of Fame goalie for the Montreal Canadiens. And last but not least, for all you fighting fans out there, Dave Tiger Williams. We're going to be giving you your choice of any one of those assigned 8x10 photos. All you got to do, and you got about 13 minutes now. I like how I'm eating up the time. 822-2487, 822-2487. Answer this Golden Girls trivia question. Golden Girls, this date, 15 years ago, May 9th, 1992, left the airwaves with their final episode. Here's the question. Here's the question. Name three of the four names of the Golden Girls characters, and I want their real-life names. Three of the four Golden Girls. You know, we're going to count the grandma. We're going to count mom. Dorothy's mom. She's in on this. Name three of their four real-life names. 822-2487. 822-2487, and you win yourself your choice, a Glenn Hall, a Ted Lindsay, Cesar Maniego, Yvan Cornoyer, Mike Bossy, Gilbert Perreault, Charlie Hodge, or a Tiger Williams signed photo. Your choice, name three of the four names of the Golden Girls, their real life names. So that's it. Give us a call, 822-2487. 822-2487. There you have it. All right, this day in history, some things have happened here. May 9th, 1899, something very important occurred. The lawnmower was patented. Where would we be without the lawnmower? That's a question that, you know, we could debate for hours. And also, May 9th, 1785, long, long time ago, that's about 222 years ago today, British inventor Joseph Bramah patented the beer pump handle. So there you go. That's all the fun stuff that has happened this date in history. So there you have it. A little history lesson for you here on the show. Also, never got to it in my baseball talk. Very interesting thing happened this week, and we'll have to see where this thing goes. Roger Clemens is coming back 6 weeks from now. He is going to be pitching for the New York Yankees. And for those of you that think sports athletes are overpaid, here's a stat for you. Roger Clemens just signed a one-year, $28.5 million pro-rated contract. He's going to be pitching probably just under two-thirds of the season, so he won't be getting all that money. I think I heard somewhere he'll get about $18 million for about 4 months' work. That's more than I get. That's more than I get. So, Roger Clemens, the rich get richer, as they like to say. As they like to say. Whew. It's allergy season for me right now. I get it the first 2 weeks when, like, around now, April, when, like, the season comes out. And I used to get allergy shots all the time as a kid. Stop that. I just stopped it. And, yeah, it's costing me this year. Allegra. That's what I'm taking. Allegra. Works somewhat. Anyways, folks. Oh, we got a caller. Let's see if he's got the answer to our trivia question. I'm excited. You're on Wiener's Barbecue. Do you know three of the four names of the real-life Golden Girls?
B. Arthur, Rue McClanahan, Betty White, and Estelle Getty.
Whoa, you got it. We got a winner. We got a Golden Girls fan. Now, my question is, and I really am hoping here, because the problem with trivia questions today is the internet, okay?
I'm not on the internet.
This is what I wanted to hear. You know where I'm coming from here, right?
Yeah.
You know where I'm coming from. Okay, so 15 years ago today, the Golden Girls has left the airwaves.
Yeah.
Did you watch the show? Were you a fan?
I'm a fan of TV trivia, but the show was good. Why are you so interested in the Golden Girls?
I don't know. I'm just having fun with it today, to be honest. But you know what, actually, I did watch it when it was on when I was a little kid. That was right around when I was like 8, 9, 12 years old, you know, the Golden Girls was on.
I guess it's like comfort food for you.
Yeah, I guess so. Can't I be an idiot every now and then? Aren't I entitled?
We're all entitled.
Thank you. That's what I want to hear. All right. So what I'm doing is I'm giving away these photos each week. I got to go to a quick break. I'm going to get your information in a moment here. But which signed photo would you like? Just so the listeners know also for future times that it is no longer on the list. Are you a hockey fan?
Yeah, somewhat. The Tiger Williams.
Ah, the Tiger Williams is off the list. You didn't go Mike Bossy, hey?
No.
Ted Lindsay?
No.
Glenn Hall? Gilbert Perreault? Why Tiger Williams?
I think he's a great personality.
There you go. He likes the personality. Okay, we're going to go to a break. I got to get your information. Going to be playing some music from the band Red Eye. We'll be right back with some more Wiener's Barbecue on 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, Canada. So stay on the line there, okay? What's your name? Actually, don't say it. It'll make it harder to get, like, some info from you when you pick up the photo. So just stay quiet.
Yeah, no, it's embarrassing to know all those women's names anyway.
Who's your favorite Golden Girl?
I guess Estelle Getty.
Estelle Getty. What was her name in the show? I can't remember right now.
I can't remember either.
I'll always remember Mona from Who's the Boss.
Hi.
And if there was ever an older lady I was attracted to, it was Rue McClanahan.
Well, she had it all going on.
Yeah. What was her name? Blanche Devereaux.
Blanche Devereaux.
I remember that. Okay, everybody, you're listening to 101.9 FM. Slow out some night. Patio blast, relax. Radio sounds gonna pick up a groove. It's only right. All the ladies looking lovely in their summer dress. Everybody just mingling around. I'm getting ready for the sun to go dancing. My last like G-Love said, gotta find myself a sweet honey. Better go, baby. I'm moonlight, gonna pick up the beat. And if I get up, order me another round to wash out some of this building. Disco lights, romance, and your body looking so fine. Maybe one day I can call it my own. And we can be together tonight. Cause in the shade of a velvet room, you're never alone. You're never alone. Never alone. Never alone. Yeah.
of a velvet room, it is my sanctuary. Shade of a velvet room, it is so unordinary. Bet your bottom dollar gonna be there tonight. In the shade of a velvet room, I'll hold you tight, yeah, yeah. Shade of a velvet room. Disappear into the shade of a velvet room with you, my dear. And we can move to the beat. Our body is starting to break off something sweet. I can savor the moment live, day sweet with some bubbly energy and deep. Nights in a velvet room, it's safe to assume it's good enough for you. Good enough for me. Shade of a velvet room, it is my sanctuary. Shade of a velvet room, it is so unordinary. Bet you bottom dollar gonna be there tonight. In the shade of a velvet room, I'll hold you tight, yeah, yeah. Shade of a velvet room, shade of a velvet room, it is my sanctuary. Shade of a velvet room, it is so unordinary. Bet you bottom dollar gonna be there tonight. In the shade of a velvet room, I'll hold you tight. Yeah, yeah. Shade of a velvet room.
Stop playing that, don't I, at this point? Anyways, we had a winner there of our Golden Girls trivia question. It was, I can't give out his name because that's the way it works down here, but I'd like to congratulate our winner and the Tiger Williams photo. Had two pieces of pizza before I went on today. The Tiger Williams, from Pyre Squared, the Tiger Williams photo is now off the list. Once again, folks, we've got I think seven left here. Photos to give away. The Cesar Maniego, Glenn Hall, Ted Lindsay, Yvonne Cornoyer, Mike Bossy, Gilbert Perreault, and Charlie Hodge. I'm going to be picking them up this Sunday. And each week, you, the listener, the winner of my trivia contest, are going to have your choice of whoever we have left, okay? And Tiger Williams now off the list. And I will say, for all of you Ted Lindsay fans out there, I had a caller call up. He was ready to answer, and he wanted Ted Lindsay. So if you want Ted Lindsay, you better be on top of the game here, because he's going to be gone before you know it. I'm such an idiot. Anyways, folks, there you have it. And also, to promote a card show, if you want to collect your own 8x10 photos and meet some of the greats of the game, Charlie Hodge. The great Charlie Hodge, former goalie for the Montreal Canadiens, I believe, will be signing. Where's the sheet? You know, this is why, Daryl, you'll never be on commercial radio, because you're doing like the plug for an event and you can't find the sheet. Bonsai Recreation Center in Burnaby this Sunday, May 13th. Charlie Hodge will be signing from 11:30 to 1:30 p.m. The show runs from 10 to 3 p.m. A great card show they've been putting on there, and I do recommend you go. All right, folks, we're going to take another break here. I got to call up my guest all the way from the Seminole Hard Rock Cafe in Tampa, Florida, B.J. Brian Bass, a man who has his pictures on the wall of the Palms. The Palms in Las Vegas. Very excited to talk to him. We're going to talk boxing. We're going to talk NFL draft. And I got to find out from BJ here. I got to find out what's going on. Is there word, is there talk that the NBA, I've heard there's talk, but what's the reality of the NBA coming to Las Vegas? I want it to happen. Let's see what he's got for us. Anyways, folks, you're listening to 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And the band I'm playing for you today, Red Eye. So we're going to take another break. And we'll be right back with Mr. Las Vegas himself, BJ Bass.
Of the Vancouver Grizzlies, and you're listening to CITR 101.9.
I've gone crazy today with that theme song. BJ?
Yes, sir.
I've gone crazy today by playing the Golden Girls theme song constantly. I have a problem.
Okay.
I have a problem.
Yes?
I have a problem. 15 years ago today, final episode of the Golden Girls.
I see.
That's all you got.
Very interesting. Are you celebrating Steve Penny's 15 strikeouts last night?
Brad Penny's 14 strikeouts last night, by the way.
What can I tell you? Baseball sucks.
Learn yourself. You know, what I loved about that, you were so close but wrong on both ends.
Of course.
I got a kick out of that. Awesome. With us right now, Mr. Vegas, BJ Brian Bass, live from the Seminole Hard Rock Hotel in Tampa, Florida. Is that where you are?
Very true. Very true.
And BJ, I gotta tell our listeners right now, I heard a rumor. You now have your pictures on the wall of the Palms Hotel in Las Vegas?
No, it's the Palms Steakhouse, actually.
Palms Steakhouse.
It's been up for a couple months. They have a thing where they put caricature pictures of you know, regular customers on the wall. And unfortunately, my picture looks like a Puerto Rican Montel Williams. But listen, I'm not complaining.
Wait, who's Montel Williams? Oh, the TV host?
Yeah. Bald guy, goatee. I can see the correlation, kind of.
Ah, you're a Puerto Rican Montel Williams. That's good stuff. Anyways, with us right now, BJ Brian Bass from Nevada, Las Vegas. And BJ, you know, you've been getting into this whole UFC thing. I have not, but you know, I want to get into that De La Hoya Mayweather fight on the weekend. BJ, I give that a 4 out of 10, maybe a 5 out of 10. Absolute tops.
Let me tell you something. I think that was a watershed moment for boxing. I can't obviously speak for your listeners out there or boxing fans around the globe. However, for me, that was the last boxing fight that I get excited for, yet alone maybe even watch. I think you're probably right on a 4 or 5. You know, listen, you maybe even go to 6 as far as, you know, the fight itself. But with all the hype built up around it, and everything else that was going into it, it has to be a 2.
Yeah.
It's not a 0. I bought into everything. I bought into the fact that Mosley and De La Hoya hated each other. I bought into the fact that Mayweather would actually have the balls to walk up to De La Hoya and say, "I'm going to ice this pussy Mexican bitch," which is exactly what he did in the press conference. And De La Hoya is going to, you know, remain, as you know, keep his composure. At the end of the fight, they're both laughing. They're both hugging. You see the Golden Boy Promotions logo hanging from the rafters. And they're both cashing $30 million. The whole thing was a setup.
It was two guys that didn't want to get hurt in that fight.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, I mean, that's always been the kind of the tag on both of those guys. Probably Mayweather a little bit more. You know, Mayweather has this history of kind of, you know, ducking fights and ducking fighters, you know, to keep his record unblemished. And De La Hoya, too, to a little bit of a lesser extent, where, you know, over and over again, we've seen him get late, deep into a fight and just stop throwing punches and start dancing around to avoid getting hit. It was terrible, man. It really was. And the hype that went into it and everyone, you know, it was almost like, you know, De La Hoya Trinidad. You remember years back?
BJ, that was what I was going to bring up. That's actually where Oscar De La Hoya lost me as a fan. I love Felix Trinidad. I love the way that guy wanted to fight people. And De La Hoya was beating him on points, he thought. And then the last four rounds, he decided, you know what? I've got like a 6-7 point lead. Let's dance the fight away, not get hurt, and I'll win on the judges' scorecards. And sure enough, they gave the fight to Trinidad, and it was such a letdown, that fight. And this one was even worse, though.
Yeah, no, this one's way worse. That was actually a decent fight, and the first six rounds was great. And you know, there was a lot that went into that as far as, you know, Trinidad, you know, taking on anybody, anytime. Finally, you know, gets to get De La Hoya in the ring, and we finally get to see, you know, who's the number one, and then, you know, who's the best pound for pound or whatever it might be. Trinidad won, and Trinidad could walk away with that title. With this fight, can Mayweather walk away with that title? I certainly don't think so. I mean, listen, Bernard Hopkins, you know, is coming out of retirement. I want to see take him on, but we both know Mayweather is not going to fight anybody of substance for the rest of his career. He's done.
Well, he says he's going to retire. We'll see what happens. This reminded me, Mayweather beating De La Hoya, it was sort of like Roy Jones Jr. It was different, though, but it's just similar to Roy Jones Jr. beating John Ruiz. Remember, he moved up to fight the heavyweight?
Right.
I didn't watch the fight, but from my understanding, I'm sure what happened was he just gave Ruiz jabs. Ruiz couldn't touch him. Ruiz probably wasn't hurt, and Mayweather got to say, I beat a heavyweight. I mean, it was sort of like that. It was like watching, it's like watching what's wrong with hockey, that fight. Just two defensive teams going at it, and Mayweather won 1-0. That's what that fight was.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what did we see? We saw maybe one good punch. Listen, the last 10 seconds of that fight was unbelievable.
Gorgeous, gorgeous.
But with the exception of that, we saw one good punch that buckled De La Hoya's knees, and I think it was the 10th. And then that was it. And so now this is a great segue into UFC, which obviously, you know, popularity the popularity of UFC has absolutely exploded. You know, the Fertitta brothers, who are actually two brothers in Las Vegas that own Station Casinos, Green Valley Ranch, Red Rock, a big casino company. They're partners with Dana White, who obviously is the guy from the Ultimate Fighter show. And they've done such a great job with the packaging of UFC. And it's, you know, listen, when two guys get in the ring at UFC, you're going to see a fight. And coming up at the end of the month on May 26th, there's actually a great fight that can, to some extent, be on the same levels of what we thought we were going to see with De La Hoya Mayweather when Chuck Liddell fights Quinton Jackson. And Quinton Jackson is a guy that hasn't been fighting in the UFC. He's been fighting in the K-1 and the MMA, the Mixed Martial Arts League. And now he's coming over to UFC, and he's actually the only guy that's ever beat Chuck Liddell. And this, I'm telling you, is going to be a fight.
Chuck Liddell, did I just see him on Entourage on Saturday?
You did just see him on Entourage, the Iceman.
Okay, there you go.
And let me tell you something about Liddell, man. I mean, this guy is absolutely crazy. His last fight with Randy Couture, that was a very highly billed fight because Couture was the champion. He had never lost. It was two undefeated fighters. Liddell was out at the Vegas nightclubs every day for like 2 weeks leading up to that fight. And you're like, dude, you know, what is this guy doing? His training schedule is you know, bottle service at Pure Nightclub. And you know, the guy walks into the ring and lays Couture out. And I mean, that's a fighter. I mean, that's a champion.
But, BJ, I mean, we grew up, when we were young kids, it was Mike Tyson. I don't know if we'll ever see anything like him again in his youth, and that's when we were growing up as kids. But UFC, people are loving it, but when you get a great boxing fight, with all the hype that lives up to it, there is almost nothing like it in sports when it actually works.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, you know, obviously living in Vegas, you know, I get to enjoy the excitement of fight night. And you know, I mean, this last weekend in Vegas was absolutely insane. Every big star was out. Myself and a friend of mine actually watched the fight closed circuit in the Mystere Theater at Treasure Island. 2,000 seats. Everyone was sold out. Everyone was packed. The anthem comes on. Everybody stands up. I mean, it was loud in there, man. I'll agree with you, but I think, you know, I think it's something that the UFC is just, it's too new, and as it continues to grow and as it continues to get more popular, I think we're going to start seeing that, and you know, it goes with the presentation of how they do it, and they're actually, you know, the UFC is now going into, you know, they're doing their fights at Mandalay Bay, they're doing their fights at the Palms, at the Hard Rock, very hip, very happening places, and you're slowly starting to see that come out. You know, Tito Ortiz, the Huntington Beach bad boy who was a champion for a long time, is dating Jenna Jameson. So you're starting to see this kind of crossover into popular culture. And, you know, Daryl, you're right, when we were growing up, it was really the great era of the heavyweight. You know, it goes in cycles, obviously, you know, Muhammad Ali, Joe Frazier, George Foreman, you know, back in the day, obviously before our time. And then after that, it kind of went to the lower weight classes with, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard and then the Hitman Hearns.
Right.
And you know, all of these great kind of, you know, lightweight, middleweight fights. And now there's nothing. I mean, what, we're supposed to get excited for Vladimir Klitschko, Lamon Brewster as a heavyweight fight? I mean, there's no one out there. And I think what you're starting to see is you're starting to see a lot of these guys kind of coming up and getting into UFC and into different fighting styles and just not into the boxing, and because it's just not exciting. It's not it's all smoke and mirrors. I mean, is there anyone that truly believes that boxing is not smoke and mirrors?
I mean, BJ, we'll get on that, but when we grew up, and we, you know, we had Tyson, and then Tyson lost to Buster Douglas, and Buster Douglas was beaten by Holyfield, a great champion, and then Riddick Bowe beat Holyfield, and Lennox Lewis was in the mix, and then Foreman got the title, and then, you know, you had the whole Holyfield, and then Lennox Lewis came around. Wasn't as great as that, but we definitely had a run there, but since Lennox Lewis beat Tyson, absolutely nothing, and there's nothing on the horizon even for heavyweight boxing.
No, there's absolutely nothing there. And listen, Lamon Brewster, who's going to fight Klitschko, you know, he looks good, and you know, I've watched some of his fights before, and you know, he looks like he has something, and he looks like he has a lot of talent, and he could become a great fighter. But I mean, his name is Lamon. It's
well,
nothing else.
What do you think Lennox Lewis would have done to Lamon Brewster? He would have beat the crap out of him.
Yeah, you know what? They may have actually fought towards the very end of Lewis's career, the very beginning of Brewster's. I may just be totally off on this one. But yeah, listen, Lennox Lewis was an absolute. You know, he was like a scientist in the ring, man. He came in and he broke his opponents down, and he had so many great fighting styles. He'd go southpaw, he'd go right. You know, he had so many different things that he did, and that's what made him so great, and that's what made him so tough to beat. You know, I mean, the only fight of consequence in which he lost was Rockman in South Africa, and obviously there was a lot going into that because, you know, Lewis was filming Ocean's 11 at the time in Vegas, wasn't prepared, wasn't training, you know, flew out to South Africa, you know, and listen, that's a 20-hour flight, and he, you know, he flies out 3 days before the fight, so there was a lot of things that came into that, and obviously when they met again, it wasn't really much of anything, and Lewis, you know, easily handed Rockman, and you know, what Rockman is probably best remembered for is the next fight. Was it with Holyfield or was it Ruiz, where that thing on his head swelled up? You remember that?
Yeah, like he had like a goiter on his head or something.
Yeah, it was disgusting. Yeah, it was like, yeah, you know, it was like a foot in circumference off the top of his freaking forehead.
Here's my boxing question for you, because if boxing's in trouble, but who knows, is you watch your UFC. I believe you watched the first fight. I believe we both just managed to catch lucky, and we caught this fight just by watching the TV, and it was on. Is the best UFC fight as good as Arturo Gatti, Mickey Ward, the first one?
You know, I mean, that's actually a great question, and you know, I don't know that I really have an opinion on that. I think, you know, again, going back to UFC just being so new, and it, you know, it's being, and when I say it being new, I mean, listen, I remember, you know, back in the day, with Tank Abbott and you know, Hoyce Gracie and the Gracie family, and before UFC had any rules at all or any rounds at all or any time limits, I mean, they put two guys in a ring, and I think the rules were nothing to the groin, no biting, and no eye gouging, and that was it. You know, it's a totally different thing nowadays, and I mean, you know, I think to me, you know, Gaudy Ward And you know what else, Wiener? Bugalata, man. Those three battles that they had. And listen, the low blows obviously is what those fights are going to be remembered for. But, you know, having watched all of those fights, I mean, I've never seen guys take punishment like that. And obviously with Ward and Gotti, they're smaller guys. They throw lighter. Bo and Galata were teeing off on each other all three fights, every round of those fights, until Galata went below the belt in all three fights.
Yeah, I just saw the second one of that live, but nonetheless, any hope, BJ, with boxing that these four belts, I mean, I don't know where this fourth belt, I think it's the WBO, I don't know where they came from, but any chance these are going away and belts are going to mean something again, or are we just screwed?
And you know what, Darryl, that's exactly it. If boxing is going to have a future and it's going to have, credibility to legions of sports fans, and listen, I mean, boxing has been around, and you go back to, Bare Knuckle and John Sullivan since the 1800s. So, I mean, there's a lot of history there, and obviously everyone grows up, and look at all the fights that we've just gone back 15 years, talking about. That's what they're going to have to do for boxing to really have a future and credibility, at least in my eyes, is to get all of this garbage away. You unify the belts. They stay unified. They don't come apart. And I mean, there's one heavyweight champion. There's one middleweight champion. There's one lightweight champion. And if you want the belt, you got to take him on. And you know what's kind of funny is, we're talking about, all of these great heavyweight fights and all the fights of our era. It was actually probably Riddick Bowe who started the whole thing to get us here when he dumped the WBA belt into a garbage can in the middle of Brooklyn, and kind of everything went on its separate way from there.
When he was dodging Lennox Lewis, now we know why.
Well, among other things, I mean, didn't this guy go to jail and he was in a psych ward at some point? I mean,
he ended up actually being a, what do they call it, a traffic security guard at an elementary school, I think, at one point. I'm not kidding. He joined the Army, too, and went AWOL. He did that.
Yeah, that's right, went AWOL,
Yeah. I think he got charged for kidnapping his own kids at one point. Am I right on that?
Yeah, I believe that you are.
We think.
And Darryl, you're absolutely right. I mean, for listen, in my eyes, like I said, I mean, that's the last fight that I'm ever even really going to care about after that debacle. Look, I mean, dude, people were paying down in Vegas. I mean, anywhere from, some guy offered me two tickets for $1,000 apiece. But trust me, they were going for 10, 15, 20 grand apiece. Someone's going to shell out $10,000 for a ticket and watch that? Laughing at the end.
I want to ask you, these are five fights that I found on the internet coming up in the next couple months. Any one of them catch your interest here? Jermaine Taylor, Corey Spinks, Miguel Cotto, Zab Judah. One I like this one, is Ricky Hatton, Jose Luis Castillo. But
sure, and listen, Hatton's a guy that gets a lot of respect. So, I mean, that is mildly interesting, I suppose.
Yeah, Vladimir Klitschko, Lamont Brewster, we talked about that one. And then this one.
If that fight, if it's just on HBO and I happen to be sitting on the couch, I'm going to watch it. I'm not going to make any effort to do anything other than that.
Don't pay for this one, BJ. I've seen them fight before. Winky Wright is one of the most boring boxers in the sport, fighting Bernard Hopkins again, July 21st.
Yeah, absolutely. And, listen, Hopkins is one of the guys that I've always loved, the executioner. And, he has a great story. He was in jail for all those years and learned to box and came out and really became, a great champion. Never ducked anybody, never talked shit, never did anything other than get in the ring and kick ass. But the problem is what, he's like 42 or something.
Yeah, but he's in good shape.
Darryl, I will say, you're talking about upcoming fights. Boxing actually lost one of its most exciting fighters, late last night.
Yeah.
When Diego Corrales, who actually lived in Vegas, was killed in a motorcycle accident. And, the fights with him and I think with Castillo.
Jose Luis Castillo, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. And he, he was one of those kind of, younger, smaller guys that would come out and just throw it. And, that has to be a loss for boxing as well.
I actually have it, BJ. I'm going to play it once I let you go. Because I watched it when it happened. I that was one of those fights like the Gotti Ward one that I just lucked into. I've got round 10, Jose Luis Castillo and Diego Corrales on YouTube, ready to play when I get ready to hear. Yeah.
I don't want to spoil it too much for your listeners, but I mean, the heart of that guy to go to go to the canvas and get back up, man. I mean, that's something that truly I think I'll always remember. I think that's one of the fights that that stands out in you know, in my history.
That Gotti Award and that one. And actually, I watched one, Ricky Hatton, Costa Zoo. I don't know if you saw that one. In Manchester. Those were cool fights.
And you know, I mean, you know, you mentioned Zab Judah. I mean, you know,
Punk.
Again,
Punk.
I mean, another guy that's just, you know, nothing.
Yeah, Punk. This Miguel Cotto's good, though, he hasn't been able to fight anybody yet, but he might
be
good.
Right, right. I mean, listen, I went to the last Barrera fight in Vegas, and Barrera, I can't remember the name of the guy he was fighting, and they had had some epic battles.
Eric Morales? Was it Eric Morales? Morales.
I don't think it was Morales. I think
Pacquiao?
It was, you know
what? Manny Pacquiao?
You know what? It might have been Morales. I think it might have been Morales.
Yeah.
And you know, again, nothing, man.
Really?
You know, that was a fight I went to. I sat third row ringside. A friend of mine was lucky enough to give me a ticket, and you're just sitting there, like, waiting for something to happen.
Yeah. What are we going to do? BJ, the other one I got for you here is a topic. I'm hearing words, it comes out, but you guys are getting all the information down in Vegas. NBA coming to Las Vegas. Any hope? What's happening?
You know, obviously, you know, is it Clay Aiken, the owner of the Sonics? It's really a shame, obviously. You know, I'm from Vancouver, and the Supersonics were the team.
BJ, I got to cut you up. BJ, sorry. Clay Aiken, I believe, was the guy who came second to Ruben Studdard in American Idol.
You're totally right. Clay Bennett is the owner, and I love that I just made that mistake. But, you know, growing up, and, you know, listen, 1996 and that great run, and Sean Kemp and Mac 10 and Peyton, and, you know, even before that with Jack Sima and Tom Chambers. I mean, you know, this is what, you know, a team I grew up loving. So, you know, it's really unfortunate that now all the talk is surrounding the Sonics coming to Vegas. You know, everyone, when the All-Star game came to Vegas and was the only city that did not have a team to host an All-Star game, you know, that was really kind of a litmus test by David Stern and the league. And what they found was two very great things. Is one, that Vegas is a serious city with serious money, and it's a serious market, not necessarily for the people that live there. You know, I think Vegas is now on the edge of about 2 million people, which would really make it one of the smallest markets. But you're also looking at 50 million visitors coming through that city a year, which you have to consider that. You know, you're coming to Vegas. Why wouldn't you go see a basketball game? You know what I mean? Why wouldn't you go see, you know, LeBron James play in Vegas? So, you know, I think that for the league, it really kind of opened their eyes. Obviously, the biggest holdback is the gambling, and the gambling on basketball. For some reason, you know, these guys in professional sports and you know, the NCAA is the exact same thing. They don't understand that Vegas keeps it honest. The last four point fixing and you know, game fixing scandals that have broke have all been discovered and caught by Vegas odd makers. Yet alone the fact that, you know, why is an NBA, you know, for when you're fixing a game, and say I'm going to fix a college game, the most that you can bet in a sports book without having to file it with the IRS, which obviously nobody is going to do, is $9,999. So if you're going to pay a college athlete, say, 30 grand, 50 grand, 100 grand to throw a game, I mean, that's a lot of action you have to lay off in all sorts of different casinos by all sorts of different people. And, you know, that's one of the reasons you can't use a phone in a sports book is because of, you know, runners and all that kind of stuff. You know, to pay a professional athlete,
an NBA player,
$5 million to fix a game. I mean, it's nearly impossible to do that, especially in Vegas. And so, you know, this whole thing about gambling and betting on basketball, I think, is absolute nonsense. Obviously, the Maloof family, who owns the Sacramento Kings, also owns the Palm Hotel in Vegas. You can't bet on NBA basketball in the Palm Hotel. Do I see that going citywide? I absolutely do not. Can I see Las Vegas sports makers and the bookies making an exception? When I say bookies, obviously, these are legal bookmakers, making an exception and saying, fine, you will not be able to bet on the Las Vegas Supersonics no matter where they play. If they're in here, if they're on the road, you cannot bet on that team, but you can bet on the rest of the league. And I think, that's something that makes sense. Obviously, the biggest negative that the NBA found when they came to Vegas is that the only stadium right now that could probably accommodate that team is the Thomas and Mack Center. The thing is like 25 years old, and apparently the league had to put like $30 million into the stadium just for that weekend. And so that's kind of the biggest thing holding it back right now is Vegas needs a stadium, and we don't have one. That being said, you know, could the casino owners, could MGM Mirage or Sheldon Adelson and the Sands Corporation, I mean, these guys are making $1 million. They're clearing $1 million a day. I mean, could they build a stadium very easily? Absolutely. So, you know, is it something that we're going to see? Yes, I definitely do. Is it something that's going to happen with the Supersonics in the next 2 years? Possibly not. And maybe, you know, within the 3 to 5 year bracket.
BJ, all I got to say about the Thomas and Mack Center, great place to see a Fish concert. That's all I got to say.
Yes, it is, my friend. Yes, it is.
Great place to see a Fish concert. Last question, last topic we got, BJ, for the day. Thanks so much for doing this. Of course. So, well, what are you doing in Tampa, actually?
Hanging out at the Hard Rock.
Atta boy. Let's do a little NBA, NFL draft here. It was 2 weeks ago, so things have settled in now. We know what's going on, and people have signed people. Randy Moss and Daryl Jackson get traded. I just bring up D-Jax because he's a Seattle Seahawk. Randy sure. Moss goes to the Patriots. D-Jax goes to the 49ers. Start with Randy Moss, though, to the New England Patriots. That's a very interesting marriage they've just got there, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it really is. But you know what I say? I think it's really – it's almost getting a little overblown because, listen, you know, Bill Belichick is the one guy in the NFL that isn't going to take any crap from anybody. He doesn't care who you are. You're going to come in. You're going to fit into the program. You're going to fit into the system. And that's the only way there is to it. I think Randy Moss has reached a point, especially last season, you know, under Art Schell and the offensive coordinator that had been running, you know, the bed and breakfast and absolute ineptness on the field on the offensive side of the ball. I think Moss has reached a point, I think it's his ninth year in the league, where he's really matured and said, you know what, man, I'm going to go, I'm going to fit into the team, I'm going to do what they want me to do, I'm going to fit into the locker room. And the reality of the situation is he has no other option because they will cut him, they will release him. If he wants to go and play for a winner, go play with Tom Brady and you know, all of these great guys and within Belichick's system, he's going to have to fit in. It's not a choice. And you know that that's something that they told him before they made that deal. And so I think that Randy Moss is going to go to that team. If Rashe Caldwell and, you know, the half-assed receiving corps that they had last year can get them, you know, almost to the Super Bowl, what are they going to do with Randy Moss? And I think it was a phenomenal deal. I think that the Patriots is one of the very few teams, if not the only one, that could have set that guideline for Moss, had Moss accept it, and I think it's going to be a success. I truly do.
And they brought Wes Walker in from Carolina and Dante Stallworth from Philadelphia. That's suddenly a pretty stacked receiving core.
And, you know, the other thing, too, is in the draft, I can't remember the name of safety out of Miami that they drafted. You know, I mean, this is a guy with a lot of talent, and again, a guy with character issues. And that's not somebody that a lot of other teams, you know, he really fell, you know, later into the draft than people thought. But it was a matter of, you know, especially with everything now with Roger Goodell and, you know, all of this disciplinary action. I think these guys' stock is going to drop. But the thing is in New England, they don't have that choice, man. I mean, this guy will be off the team in training camp if he F's around. So, you know, so I think the Patriots had an absolutely outstanding draft. And I mean, listen. I mean, is Belichick going to do it again? I mean, these guys, they just turn bodies over, and they do what it takes to win, man. It's unbelievable. I mean, this is a true dynasty, you know, that we're seeing
That's
here.
It's not a true.
You know, they're going to lose to the Colts in the conference finals. I mean, I think that still has to count as success in the parity-driven NFL.
Oh, yeah, everybody remembers who loses in the divisional final of 2002. That's something I'm all over. BJ, Daryl Jackson goes to the San Francisco 49ers. Very quietly it happened. Here's a guy who was an outstanding receiver for Seattle, had injury problems the last couple of years. Great pickup for San Francisco. Seattle, I guess, would just want to clear some cap space. That's one of the realities of the NFL, but Daryl Jackson was an outstanding player for Seattle.
Yeah, I mean, that's true, but he was also injured an awful lot, and especially when they really needed him. You know, he wasn't there. And, you know, listen, I mean, you know, obviously with Elon Branch, it kind of makes Jackson, you know, a little bit expendable. DJ Hackett, you know, they have other bodies there. You know, listen, I also have zero faith in Mike Holmgren, so it could have been a major mistake. You know, I mean, is it something we're having, you know, Branch lining up across from D-Jax? Is that something that you want to keep around and give it a shot and give Hasselbeck even more targets down the field? And especially now that this news comes out that, what, Sean Alexander thinks his foot might still be broken? That's something that I think we'll have to wait till we get into the season to see, you know, really who won on that one and really, you know, the fallout of it.
Couple more questions, Beach. Thanks so much for doing this. The Dallas Cowboys, I declare them the great winners of the NFL draft in the Brady Quinn trade for dropping four spots from 22 to 26 in the first round and giving up their fourth and fifth rounders this year. They pick up Cleveland's first rounder next year. You know that's going to be a top 6-7 pick probably for only dropping four picks in the first round. Who knows what Brady Quinn's going to be, but you got to say a great trade there by Jerry Jones and his crew.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, New England did a lot of those too, where they were trading down and getting extra picks and yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know what? Brady Quinn obviously is now the great question mark now. And I got to tell you, Darryl, I believe. And, you know, obviously this is just an opinion, and you know, we could be ending up looking at Ryan Leaf here, is I think if he goes three, or he goes two, three, five, you know, anywhere in the top ten, he's a bust. Him sitting there for 4.5 hours watching everybody and their mother get picked before he goes at 22, ends up going to his hometown team, the Cleveland Browns, and, you know, ends up being a great story. I think that is actually going to have an impact in how he is as a pro. Could you imagine the stress and like what that has to 4.5 hours? The guy sitting there. I mean, he thinks he's going number three. He could be going number one, and all of a sudden he goes at 22. I think that's going to have a large role in really in his success at the next level, and you know, make him more of a man and almost a thinking man's quarterback, a Tom Brady type guy with real character. You know what I mean?
And last question, Beach. I'll remember you liking Brady Quinn when you pick him really high in our fantasy football pool. I'll remember that.
Not going to happen. I have Liner and Cutler. I'm satisfied.
I'll remember keeping the eye on you there. NFL draft. You know, I watched it on TV. I actually watched it over the
six and a half hours.
Not all of it, but I watched it over San Jose Detroit game two. I actually did. That actually looks like an event I want to go to in my lifetime, is the NFL draft.
Yeah, it does look like a lot of fun. I mean, my question with it is, why is it 6.5 hours? Why is you know, Detroit in a two-hole, you know, taking 20 minutes to make their pick? I mean, I understand that, you know, the phones are ringing, they're trying to work a last-minute deal. But, like, I mean, don't you know what you're doing at that point? I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, what 6.5 hours? Is that really necessary?
It's like our fantasy football pool, BJ, where the guy who has the first pick in the draft, he knows it for a good, like, 6 months, and then the draft comes, and he's sitting there looking at a magazine thinking who he's going to pick.
And I would almost go one step further, and I'm probably getting a little un-PC here, but it's almost like a fantasy football draft of Down syndrome, people.
Oh, watch it there. Watch it. Don't do that twice. BJ Bass.
It's been so long, Darryl. I've been so well-behaved on your show lately.
What BJ says does not represent what we hear. Thank you, CITR. BJ Bass from Nevada, Las Vegas. BJ, thanks, as always, for coming on the show. Always do appreciate it. Happy belated 30th birthday.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. Do me one favor. If you see Brendan Morrison crossing the street, just take him out, please.
Had enough of him, eh?
Oh, come on. I mean, come on.
BJ, set this up for us, though. I'm about to play at the YouTube. Corrales Castillo. This was one of the great rounds in boxing history.
You know, absolutely. And you know, like I said before, you know, boxing really lost one of their great young fighters. I mean, they got 29, so not that young, but, you know, really lost a great fighter and a guy like Gotti and Ward and these guys that come out and they have so much heart and passion for what they do. And, you know, you'll listen. I mean, the amount of punishment that both of these boxers take and for him to go down, no one in the building thought he was getting back up. And obviously, you'll listen and see what happens.
Yeah, and I should say, if you look at them coming into this round, I just say that because you can't see it here, but going into this round, they were beat-up fighters. BJ, thanks a bundle.
Absolutely. Thanks, Darryl.
All right, everybody. So here it is. Diego Corrales passed away last night at 7:22 p.m. He was a great boxer, and this was really his peak round. And, you know, just I do have to tie this into the De La Hoya Mayweather fight. Is it was such a letdown, and, you know, this is the kind of match, this is the kind of fight, and this is the round you want to see. And Diego Corrales, who passed away yesterday at the age of 29, did give us one of arguably the great rounds in boxing history in a fight that was called by many the fight of the year. So here it is. Listen to the whole thing here. Hopefully it gives you some justice here. I know you're not going to get the visual, but here's the 10th round of Diego Corrales, who did pass away last night at the age of 29, versus Jose Luis Castillo. These are 230-pound fighters who gave us one of the great rounds you could ever want to see in boxing. So just listen in, and here's the round.
Round 10, okay. Scheduled for 12.
Time, get over here. Go, time in, let's go.
Tony Weeks checking the tape on the left glove of Castillo. They touch gloves, and here we go again. The WBC-WBO unification lightweight title fight. Oh, what a left hook by Castillo, and Corrales is down. The mouthpiece comes out.
Come to me. You all right? You want to continue? Okay, here we go. Time. Come here.
They get the mouthpiece back. He was up at 8.
Put it in. There you go. Let's go. Here we go.
Joe Goosen trying to get involved. What a dramatic moment here in round 10 as Corrales hits the canvas. Castillo looking to finish it here. He goes down again. Takes the mouthpiece out.
Come here. You all right? I'm going to penalize you. Taking 1 point off. Time. 1 point off here. 1 point off. 1 point.
Excessive spitting out of the mouthpiece. A point deducted.
Come on. He's spitting out the mouthpiece.
To make matters even worse now.
You got to get inside on him now.
Dreadful round for Corrales. Down 2 times here in the 10th. Again, Castillo going back to work.
And if Corrales can get through this round, the dynamic of the fight has now changed to the point where he may very well need a knockout.
With a minute 35 to go, he's got a long way to go, Corrales.
Just hurt Castillo with the right hand, or at least pushed him back. That was astonishing, and he hurts him with a hook.
Corrales comes back, a straight right, and now Castillo against the ropes. Unbelievable. Ebb and flow. Standing here, Mandalay Bay. Corrales coming back after being on the canvas twice here in the 10th. And Castillo steps back. Corrales winging. Castillo's in trouble. Weeks steps in, and the fight is over. Corrales with a remarkable, dramatic turnaround to win this fight. Diego Corrales said he would go through hell before losing this fight. He may have.
That might be the single most extraordinary comeback within a round to win a fight.
So there you have it. Diego Corrales passed away last night at the age of 29 in a motorcycle accident. That was his all-time moment there, and I did watch that fight when it happened. I remember because a friend of mine, he'd come over and watch the fights, and this one I just happened to pop on, and I was actually talking to him on the phone, I think, when it happened, saying, God, you're actually missing a good one. I didn't know it was going to be, but you're actually missing a good one. And yeah, that was some round. Diego Corrales knocked down twice in that round, and it was a brutal fight to begin with to get to that point, and then to come back like he did. It wasn't like he got Castillo with one shot. He got him with a whole bunch of shots, and then the ref stopped it. And you actually go on YouTube, and you pause it when the ref stopped it. You could see the ref pretty much made the right call stopping it, because Castillo had his hands down, head in the air, eyes closed. I mean, it was time to put an end to that fisticuff. And, you know, boxing, I got to say it, boxing when you get a great fight like that, and if you want to go find another one, type in Arturo Gatti, Mickey Ward. Okay? You got to, I don't know. People talk about UFC and all this stuff, but I say, when you get a good boxing fight, you get a big fight that lives up to its pub. I mean, it's like I like the pennant race in baseball, and I don't need great moments all the time, but when you do get them, I mean, they are special, and boxing's got that. It's got the history, it's got the tradition, and it's just something about it. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not into the UFC, but I'm really into boxing. Go figure. Well, the Kentucky Derby was on the weekend, and it was Street Sense winning the Kentucky Derby. So will he be the first Triple Crown winner since affirmed in 1978? So that was something that happened on the weekend. I'm actually going to play the Kentucky Derby for you when I do come back from this break. All right, folks, we are going to take one more break here. You are listening to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, every Tuesday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. Mike with Fletcher Head will be on after me at 6 o'clock. So one more break. And once again, we did have winner today, and the Tiger Williams photo is off the shoot. Every week from now on, we are going to be giving away a signed 8x10 photo of a hockey great. And the players as follow: Charlie Hodge, Hall of Fame Montreal Canadian goalie, Gilbert Perreault, Mike Bossy, Yvon Cormier, former Canuck goaltender Cesar Maniago, Ted Lindsay, and Glenn Hall. We lost Tiger Williams this week. We got a winner this week. He chose Tiger Williams. And if you yourself would like to meet or get a, or and I should say, get a signed photo from Charlie Hodge, you should go down to the Bonsar Recreation Center in Burnaby Sunday, May 13th, as the show will be going on from 10 to 3 p.m. Charlie Hodge will be signing from 11:30 to 1:30. It's a sports card and memorabilia show. It's a good one. It's a small room, reasonable admission to get in. Go down, check it out, especially if you're in the area. And hey, 11:30 to 1:30, I think it'll be about $10 for a signature and the photo. You will get to meet and get an autograph from Charlie Hodge. All right, folks, we're going to take one last break. You're listening to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, Canada. When we come back, the first thing you're going to hear is a replay of the 2007 Kentucky Derby. It's another thing I like, horse racing. And we're going to play some horse racing when we come back. And I got to close things off today with NBA talk if I got time, but my thoughts for the Vancouver Canucks 2006-07 season. And I will say, in my hockey pool, I'm all Red Wings. I am all Red Wings. I got eight of my... There's Mike. He's in the other room. He gave me a wave. Eight of my 14 guys are Red Wings. So I am looking good. I call Red Wings. Anyways, folks, you're listening to 101. I've already said that. Let's play the song.
They are in the gate. And they're off in the Kentucky Derby. As Twinklesburg breaks like a shot. And hard spun with speed, too. And Cowtown Cat has some early speed. As a crush of horses passes beneath the twin spires for the first time. And it's hard spun to be the early leader. Here's Stormello on the far outside. He'll be caught wide going into that first turn. In between horses. Twinklesburg right there, third. Cowtown Cat up and on the face between horses, fourth. On the far outside, Scat Daddy is running in fifth. Sedgefield sixth toward the inside. No Biz Like Showbiz is seventh in between horses. Any Given Saturday is now eighth. Liquidity is ninth toward the inside. Dominican runs in tenth. Ray Hunter is 11th. Sam P is 13th. Curlin is 14th in the opening half mile here. Moana Bull is 15th. Zen Harrow is 16th toward the inside. Tiago moves to 17th. Circular K is 18th. He's about 20 lengths from the lead. And then down toward the inside, it's Storm and May. Straight Sense is
second to last. Straight sets is the 19th of 20 as they continued on the backstretch run. The last of them all is I'm a Wild and Crazy Guy. And the speed is tough here, a 46-1 opening half mile as Hardspun bowls along as they cross into the final half mile of the Kentucky Derby. Teufelsberg is second on the outside. Sedgefield tucked away toward the rail third. Stormello is fourth on the outside and now beginning to advance. No Biz Like Showbiz, Any Given Saturday is right there. On the far outside, Great Hunter is launching a bid. He's moving wide as they approach the top of the stretch. And here's Street Sense with a huge move on the far turn. And Calvin Burrell saving ground every step of the way. But it's Hardspun to catch as they come off the turn. A mile and 37 flat. And Street Sense draws alongside as they move headlong into the final furlong. And Street Sense has roared from 19th position to first in the Derby. Hardspun tries to hold for second. And then further back at Sedgefield on Any Given Saturday. And here is Street Sense, a stretch running sensation to win the Derby by two. Hardspun was second. Curlin finished third. And I'm a Wild and Crazy Guy was fourth. The final time for this Derby, 2 minutes. And 2 seconds.
All right, there you have it. The 2007 Kentucky Derby. I don't know why I played it, but I did. Street Sense won it, and will he be the horse to be the first to win the Triple Crown since affirmed in 1978? That's a long time since a horse has won all three majors. The Preakness is next up on the list, May 18th at Pimlico. Okay, hockey. Didn't get into any hockey today. BJ got into a little Brendan Morrison. Didn't like Brendan Morrison in these playoffs. But, yeah, that's the end. That's the end of it. Well, the Canucks season did end on Thursday. A 2-1 double overtime loss in Anaheim to the team formerly known as the Mighty Ducks. It was a good season, led by an all-world goalie and two identical Swedish twins. Roberto Luongo is a legitimate Vezina candidate and a legitimate Hart Trophy nomination. Still, as far as I say, he did not have the best season a Canucks goalie has ever had. That was still Kirk McLean in 1994. While Luongo was able to lead the Canucks over a, you know, tight, close, first-round seven-game series over the Dallas Stars, he was not able to beat Anaheim in Game 2 despite some stellar goaltending. Kirk McLean, in his playoff run in 1994, not only beat the Calgary Flames with one of the great saves a Canuck goalie will ever make in the seventh game of that series on a Robert Reichel shot, he also went on to beat the Dallas Stars, the Toronto Maple Leafs, and he almost toppled the New York Rangers until falling to the team that won their first Stanley Cup in 54 years in the seventh game. Game 1 for Kirk McLean in that series, one of the greatest games a goaltender will ever play in sports history. And McLean did it on a bigger stage than Luongo, Madison Square Garden, when hockey was never more popular than in 1994 in New York. All in all, it was a good season for the Canucks, but no more than that. They get a B, a hard-earned B. It was their first playoff series win since they beat the Blues, the flu-ridden St. Louis Blues, in 2002. But that's all they did. They won a regular season division title. They beat out four other teams. And they won a round. Eight teams won a round. So the Canucks are really no better than a quarter of the league. That's all they accomplished. And still, this is why I'm so, you know, not jumping up and down for this Canuck team. In 37 years as an organization, the Vancouver Canucks, see, the lockout screws up all the math because is it 37 seasons, 36 years? I don't even know anymore. However, and I haven't done the math, but I will do it. No Canuck team has ever won a division title, and there's six of them now, and two rounds in the playoffs in the same season. That is pathetic for a franchise that has been pathetic. I don't care what you say. This has been, arguably, since the WHA teams came in, Hartford and Winnipeg. So before that, of the 16 teams or 17 teams before that, maybe you could put Washington in there, but I don't think so. The Canucks and Washington fighting to be the worst franchises in the history of the National Hockey League. How pathetic. A team wins one round and wins a regular season division title, and we jump up and down and call it such a successful season. This is still a franchise that has done two things in its history. Three things, actually. They've had Pavel Bure in his prime, they made the Cup in 1982, and they made the Cup in 1994. That's all the Canucks have been good for, and that's all that they've done up to this point. Now, they're looking better for next year, but still, 37 years as a franchise, not once have they won a regular season division title and two playoff rounds in 1 year. Just do that, and then I'll say it was a good season. All right, everybody, thanks for listening to Wiener's Barbecue here on 101.9 FM, CITR Radio, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. I'd like to thank my guest, Terry McKeag. Best of luck to the UBC Thunderbird men's baseball team in their playoff run. They go to Caldwell, Idaho, in a Region 1 tournament. They're in big trouble. Lewiston Clark, the top team in the country, the dynasty, or one of the top teams in the country, is going to be at that tournament, too. So best of luck to them down there, though. And, of course, big thank you and a shout-out to BJ Brian Bass. I'd like to thank our winner for the trivia question and all of you, all two of you, that called in to try to win the prize. And, of course, if you've been listening to my show today, you know what I'm going to close it with. 15 years ago today, this show went off the air. Went off the air. Had their final episode, The Golden Girls. The Golden Girls. So, without further ado, for about the third, maybe fourth time during this show, I will play, maybe fifth time, I will end it with the Golden Girls theme song, a perfect finale and a perfect segue to Mike with Flexure Head. That's the song, hey?
I can live.
You can live with Golden Girls? Awesome. All right, everybody, thanks for listening. Have a great day, everybody. And I don't really hate the Canucks that much. I've just, come on. They haven't won a division and two rounds in the same year ever. It's not asking for that much. It's 37 years now. Thanks for listening. Have a great day. Bye.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down the road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant. And if you threw a party, you would see the beat.